There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Gentlemen, we're live at the Elder Dragon Drawl podcast. This is your co-host Igor, and this week we don't have an Iksha, sadly, because he's doing some family things. But because one Iksha is a huge loss, I had to bring two people to replace him. So first we have Robbie. Say hi, Robbie.
Hey. Hi.
We haven't heard from you in a couple of months, right? Since the last time you were here.
Yeah, it's been like almost a year. We made that lore-based episode about Ravnica. That was fun, but now we're on like a more serious topic today.
It was supposed to be a lore-based
It was like tinfoil hat theories about what's gonna happen in World of Spark.
But I mean, this episode was also supposed to be lore-based, but then some things happened, so we brought another guest. Say hi, mysterious guest.
Well, hello.
Your voice sounds a bit familiar. Who the hell are you?
My name is Jesse from Team Turn 3. And I think this is probably the third time I've been on the podcast now, or the second or third time at least.
Second and third, I can't remember. I think it's second actually, but carry on.
I'm known as Pongo Pygmaeus, or just Pongo, on the CEDH Reddits and Discords. I also stream live CEDH content, typically on Sundays on our Twitch channel, which is twitch.tv/teamturn3.
Finally, you guys have started streaming and doing content again.
Yep, that's right. It only took about a year or so.
Yeah, we've been hyped ever since you started doing content again, and that's actually super nice. Guys, do you have some commanders of the week for me?
Jesse, want to start?
Commander of the week. Let's go with something like a little bit spicy, I suppose. I think that the Euro deck, the new Simic food chain deck, is kind of neat. Mm-hmm. I think it might be one of the best or the best Simic food chain deck for competitive EDH. Just because it's sorry.
Who is helming it for the uninitiated?
That's Euro. So Simic Titan from Theros Beyond Death.
Yeah, because he actually like gets land drop, so you can actually play something that's not a creature outlet.
Right, he draws a card. So basically, as soon as you just go infinite off of food chain, you just play him. You know, he sacrifices himself, or you know, you can immediately sack him to food chain or something like that, and then you just draw a card and. From that point on, sort of the world's your oyster in terms of win conditions.
Yeah, it's like Tishana, just like better.
Yeah, with a castable commander, exactly.
I was going to say it doesn't cost a million mana.
Yeah.
I mean, Tishana Elf Ball was like pretty cool, but when Paradox Engine got banned, it kind of went down the drain.
Aww. Robbie, what do you have for us?
I was gonna say something like old school, like JVP, because I've been enjoying like just playing JVP High Tide casually. But this Saturday, I actually, while Mate and the rest were playing their like CDH pod for the league, Borna had to get up because he was playing at the casual table, and I took his place, and I got to play your Saskia deck.
It's Tessa Saskia actually, but that deck is fun.
Yeah, it was just like Saskia equipment, stuff to get Saskia infect, and like just bash face. I haven't had that much fun in like a casual EDH party like in months, I suppose. Like actually, it was just refreshing just to play like a beater. And she's so cool. Like she's hasty. You get to hate people you obviously don't like. And she has vigilance and like a million equipments. It's brutal.
You forgot the best part of the deck. Nyxia made a token for her ability when she comes into play. Imagine a Chibi Saskia saying, what does it say again?
Something murder.
Yeah, time for murder, something like that. It's super cute.
Yeah, something like.
And then you die.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah,
I'll get.
That's what happens.
I'll get the token. Right now, because I have it right next to me. Oh yeah, it's yay murder.
Yeah, like it was literally the yay murder. Like I had sort of War and Peace, mm-hmm. Umezawa's Jitte, Conqueror's Flail, Ansa's Kia, and then I just named Luca, attacked into Breeds, and before that, before combat, I cast what was that? What's the name of the card? Triumph of the Horde.
Oh, Triumph of the Horde. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That was like 20 infect on two people. That was brutal. So that's my commander of the week. That's
some good old-fashioned casual fun, am I right?
Yeah.
The thing about that, Saskia, most of the casual decks we build is, you know, casual in nature, but we build them a bit lower curve than normal casual decks.
Right. So they're a little bit higher up in terms of power level than, just the very bottom.
Just a bit faster than your regular casual deck.
They're not quite precons. They're not quite Sushi Hulk.
It's like every winning command zone deck, I suppose.
I guess
about that. I guess it's about that power level, I suppose. I guess like the better ones at least.
Mm.
It's super fun at least.
Yeah. That. Yeah. For sure. But I think we should get the topic.
Well,
speaking of, yeah.
Can't I like have a commander of the week? At least my own podcast, god damn it.
Is it Alesha?
Actually, just because you a couple of weeks ago you were like, come on, have something that's not Alesha.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? He actually has a good point. Because she's my girl and I'm always going to be repping her. But I decided to build a new, more casual deck. I was going to build a new competitive, but then I see I don't have enough mana rocks. So let's build it a bit more casually. Heliod, Suncrowned.
Yeah, he's spicy. He's like probably the second best like mono white commander there is behind Teshar.
Mm-hmm. I don't have all the good mana rocks to play, you know, a super fast version of Heliod. So I decided just to build him stacksy and have that one combo that everybody knows.
Mm-hmm.
I played against Tessa's Dinosaurs like before the podcast. It actually held its ground pretty well.
I'm like almost inclined to say that it might be better than Teshar. It might be the best mono white commander.
I think you play generally better cards in that deck.
The combo's for sure easier.
But yeah, just a one card combo is really, really powerful.
Yeah.
And actually, you got like the best tutor for Ballista, like in Ranger Captain of Eos. He both tutors Ballista to your hand and is a silence effect on a stick when you need it.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get that one for my deck, yeah.
Yeah.
I got a spare one if you need it.
Ooh.
Enlightened Tutor too. Like the deck actually has some ways to tutor its win conditions.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
deck, I bought myself a Japanese Enlightened Tutor, so you know.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Recruiter of the Guard and Captain of Eos.
Mm-hmm.
Ranger Captain of Eos.
Yeah.
Is that one or less, or is it just one?
One or less.
Yeah. It's really good. Like the deck actually has legs, in my opinion.
Plus, I get to play the fun combination of Orb of Dreams and Hokori, Dust Drinker. That's always fun.
Yeah, sure. That certainly is always
fun.
And yeah.
In the first game I played against a buddy of mine and a couple other friends. One of them has the Rete deck, right? Mono red one.
Mm-hmm.
My turn two was Kataki, and I was laughing.
Oh.
I get to play all the cards I love in a bit more casual setting, so you know.
Yeah, that's sort of mean. Like, yeah. But at least you had fun.
Funnily enough, the whole table was like, yeah, this was actually fun. I wasn't beating down on just casual players because they also know how to build decks. They just play a bit more casually than you or Mate.
Or Igor or anyone in the league now.
I don't know. Nikola is kind of casual in our league.
Nikola has amongst the best decks, and I'm certain Jesse would agree. He's playing like Najila.
Oh, definitely. But I'm not sure why isn't he winning more games or any.
Yeah.
Sounds like pilot error.
Wow. Might be,
I
but
mean, it's fine for us to throw shade at him. We know the guy, but you just murdered a stranger.
He's playing the Chilla Tempo, I imagine.
Yeah, it's like, but he's going to shift into Sushi Hulk now.
Yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily the best thing to do. Yeah. I'm trying it out to see it, because like the layering is obviously a lot better than it has been in the past, but it's still tough to pivot between lines, because you don't have like a built-in card advantage outlet or generator commander like with like Thrasios and Timna. So if you go for your Najeela wins and like for whatever reason it doesn't work out, a lot of the time you're kind of struggling to then assemble your two card combo, Flash and Hulk. Mm-hmm. Whereas like something like just pure Demonic Consultation, Thassa's Oracle, you don't necessarily feel as locked into just like holding on to those cards just to combo with them, with one another. You know, you can just sort of play them as you know, individually acceptable cards or crazily good cards in the case of Demonic Consultation, just on the pure tempo plan.
Yeah, that's true. And plus, Oracle like literally lets you cut Lab Jace, which was kind of awkward to cast, right?
Like the backup plan is so nice. Yeah, and that's overshadowed a bit by Oracle Hulk in particular. Yeah. Yeah. But this is a big upgrade for Najeela Tempo as well.
But I've been seeing like players play like Najeela Sushi Hulk, but actually adding like Sneak Attack into the deck as an additional way to just get Hulk in and let it die.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it seemed kind of like dirty, but every match I've seen like with the Sneak Attack version, if Sneak Attack hit the field, it actually won the game, which was kind of interesting.
It's tough to interact with.
Yeah, actually is.
If it resolves naturally. I think it's not terrible. I've seen Sneak Attack used to pretty good effect in a variety of different decks.
Yeah, like you know, the Pet Cemetery deck that Lurk just recently made. I've seen versions like run Sneak Attack, and then like if you get like a turn 3 or 4 Vilis over that and got mana to spare just to draw cards and like get rid of a few dorks, that's amazing.
And like Sneak Attack, just like sneaking in Derevi is kind of cheeky.
Yeah, that's true. That's very, very true. Derevi is such an underrated card, actually, because people who haven't played like EDH when Derevi came out and was the menace of the format don't even like notice him because his effect is so subtle. Like, okay, you get a 2 on top of a permanent, but that's so very impactful. People don't even get that.
First of all, it's her.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, sorry.
She has nice bird titties to go with that.
I will not comment on that.
That's good, because only I have a right to be rude in this podcast.
Sure, okay.
Well, you behave, but let's go to the meat of the podcast, shall we?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, a couple of days ago, like, what is the exact date? I can't remember. But like a week ago, Banner Restricted update came out for Commander. Banner update, I guess, because it's restricted by nature. And
right.
We were all expecting, on previous podcasts we talked about it might be it might be Flash, it might be both those cards. Turns out, Robbie, what was the cards that were banned?
They banned exactly 0 cards.
And
reasoning being, according to their official statement, people haven't had enough time to play Flash in casual games, and with the printing of Arena Rector in Battle Bond and Nyx Bloom Ancient just recently in Feros, they want to give players the opportunity to flash them in and fetch Oblique Planeswalker, float some mana or something, whatever. And that was the official reasoning why they didn't ban Flash. They gave no reason why Consultation wasn't banned, and there was that rumor that they would ban, like, Cyclonic Rift. No word about that either. So yeah.
This is actually, as far as all of this is concerned, news to me, because this wasn't on the official announcement. So I'm just curious as to the source of...
It was a Twitter post from the RC, one of the RC members. I can fetch it up somewhere. It's in the official CDH Facebook group. It was like posted there like a few days ago, like 4 or 5 days ago.
But
that's interesting.
Let's tackle the whole, you know, with Arena Rector and Nyxblom Ancient. A thing that it might help Flash decks, right? Just to make it more interesting. I'm looking at EDH Rex page for Flash, the card. High synergy card, the first card is Protein Hulk, with 86% of the decks that have Flash have a Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just looking through the whole page. I'm not seeing any of the... I mean, Academy Rector is here, but Arena Rector, not so much. None of the cards they mentioned with the...
Well, so I would just add that EDH Rec, as much as I love that resource, it doesn't actually scrape data from Tapped Out.
Oh, I know.
So if people are building their decks on Tapped Out, it's not going to be reflected on EDH Rec, which means that I don't know that it necessarily will capture some of the more recent innovations and some of the more recent decks that people are brewing up, just because I feel like that's kind of a go-to place for a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly. But still, like, the reasoning is kind of weak, if you ask me. Like, people literally had, since the inception of EDH or Elder Dragon Highlander, the chance to play with Flash. So, like, just printing 2 or 3 or 5 more, like, valuable targets? I don't know. I'm not buying it.
I have seen some really funny shit posts regarding Flash. What you can Flash in, and Barrier of Heavens was my favorite of all spices.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's the kind of magic I want to be playing.
Yeah. I think you're also just forgetting the ultimate casual Najeela win condition of Flash Craterhoof.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, God. Yeah, you're right. Okay, but maybe, then again,
maybe we you might as well Flash. Just...
You can also, like...
You could also do it in, like, a Tana Thrasios-type deck.
Yeah, or,
just
like...
any Tana deck with blue.
Or just, like, play, like, Natural Order with Tana. Should work.
Well, I mean, not if you draw into your Craterhoof, then you need your Flash.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. Then you need Flash.
But, yeah, generally, for general casual, Magic, does Flash being unbanned change anything?
No.
But, Jesse, since you're the expert here, what was ruined by keeping Flash Hulk legal in the format?
I have a couple of things to say, and before I get to that, I just want to return to your point about Flash potentially seeing play in casual, in more lower-powered settings. Don't worry, I'll get to your other question, and I'll make sure we don't go off topic too much, but I think it's actually a card that's like underplayed in lower-power settings because people don't necessarily recognize all the modes that the card actually has. So the card lets you essentially entomb a reanimation target if you're playing that type of strategy. So if you're playing like a blue black green sort of reanimatory type deck, and you know you want to reanimate something like a Terastodon, and why not just put it into your hand and then flash it into play, destroy 3 things, and then reanimate it again, destroy 3 more things.
That is a great point.
If you're playing Woodfall Primus, why not just flash in your Woodfall Primus and then get the persist trigger and actually get to keep your Woodfall Primus and destroy 2 things. You know, let's say you're playing something like your Archon. What's the black-white Archon that when it dies...
Despair.
No. So that's the model black one, I think.
No. I was thinking of Angel of Despair.
Angel of Despair,
basically
yeah.
The same thing, but
it's basically the same thing, but it exiles instead, correct. So, yeah, why not just flash that in and take 2 things out and then have it in the graveyard, right, to reanimate later? So, like, you have all these potential applications where you're putting something into your graveyard, but you're also just essentially triggering its enter the battlefield ability. And I think that's, like, kind of underexplored as potential usage of the card. just because it's overshadowed, obviously, by like the especially broken applications. You know, not to say nothing even about Nyx Bloom Ancient and the potential to just have a mana tripler for 4 mana, which I think is definitely worth exploring in more lower powered circles. But yeah, to move on to what is Flash currently doing now in CEDH. So let's talk a little bit of history about Flash combined with Protean Hulk. So as everybody who is familiar with competitive Commander will certainly know, what happens when you flash in Protean Hulk and you don't pay essentially 5 extra mana, it's going to die right away, as we had just discussed. And then you're going to go search your deck for 6 CMC worth of creatures. And, you know, you're not going to be nice about it and just get a Consecrated Sphinx or something like that. You're going to try to win on the spot, because why not? So in the past, before the printing of a certain card that I'll get to in a minute, there have been like a variety of different Hulk decks that have essentially sought to get different combos worth 6 CMC total. Some standouts are the kind of original Breakfast Hulk. So that would be using the Breakfast Pile plus Laboratory Maniac. So Cephalid Illusionist with Nomads in Core plus Laboratory Maniac. Typically, actually, that was more of a like a Dread Return style deck. So you would main phase your Flash, so do it during your turn, get the trigger off of Hulk dying, and you'd get protection from Grand Abolisher. And then you would mill your deck with the Breakfast combo, Cephalid Illusionist and Nomads in Core, until you put your entire deck into your graveyard, and then you use Dread Return from your graveyard because you just milled it, sacrificing 3 creatures. So typically the mill creatures, the Breakfast combo, and then one other creature, an Arcamoeba that you milled along the way or something else that you had in play. You know, and in very early versions of the deck, you know, you might actually have something else that you can reanimate from your graveyard using like Unearth, like Fate Stitcher, for example. And then, yeah, so then you reanimate Angel of Glory's Rise, which brings back all the humans in your graveyard. So you'd bring back Laboratory Maniac as well as Hapless Researcher. And then you would draw from an empty library. Laboratory Maniac's replacement effect means that you end up winning the game instead of losing the game, as you would normally do if you draw from an empty library because of game rules. So that was, I would say, essentially like the first seriously competitive Hulk deck that was brewed when Protean Hulk was unbanned. And that was a very, very strong deck. You know, moving along a few months, even years later, people started branching out and came up with a few different types of what we call piles. So combinations of creatures that you could get off Protean Hulk to win the game. I'm not going to go through the entire history. I'm just going to go talk about sort of the more recent innovations. So we have Shuffle Hulk, and what that does is that it basically took the combination of the Breakfast combo, so Cephalid Illusionist and Nomads in Core, plus Blood Artist and a Sack Outlet. And essentially you would mill your deck like before, like the pure Breakfast Hulk combo, but you would play an Eldrazi Titan that lets you shuffle your graveyard back into your deck. And so what this means is that you can essentially mill your deck infinitely. But, you know, that on its own doesn't win. So what you do, you include Narcomoeba as well in your deck. Every time you mill your Narcomoeba, you get to put it into play for free. And then you get to sacrifice it to your Sack Outlet, which triggers Blood Artist and lets you drain somebody for 1 life. So you get to do this infinitely because Narcomoeba goes to your graveyard and you would have one of the Eldrazi Titans to put it back into your deck. So you get to do this forever. Now, this is very strong because it all fits into a single pile. What that means is you get Protean Hulk that dies and you immediately get that entire combo into play right away. So nobody can interact with it by, let's say, exiling your Protean Hulk when you try to reanimate it to get a few additional creatures. In addition, this deck also played Memory's Journey, which would allow it to have additional protection. So what would happen is if somebody tried to kill one of your creatures while you're doing this combo, typically in response to a shuffle trigger from your Eldrazi, you could just play your Memory's Journey, put the Eldrazi back into your deck, and then mill it again so that you could essentially get rid of the... you could combo off on top of removal or graveyard hate. So yeah. You would get like one counterspell essentially built into your pile for just one green mana, in addition to, you know, like whatever you had in hand to try to force your flash through. So pretty resilient deck, because it fought well against lots of different types of hate, and it required your opponents to have potentially multiple pieces of removal to interact with it. In addition, we have a deck that I personally was highly involved in actually brewing. And I just, you know, I brewed the deck, but the tech for the deck was brought to the... I had a card that was brought to my attention by a user by the name of Elfric, a card called Sacred Hulk, Sacred Guide. And this spawned the deck called Sacred Hulk. And so this actually is going to lead us into our discussion of this new horrible monstrosity of a deck. So in a lot of respects, this is kind of like the precursor to where we are now, the Sacred Hulk deck. So in this case, what happens when you get your Protean Hulk trigger? So when Protean Hulk dies, you search your deck for Laboratory Maniac, Sacred Guide, a Hapless Researcher, which we mentioned before. It's essentially a human wizard that lets you sacrifice it to loot, so draw a card and then discard a card. And then finally, you have one extra CMC worth to put a variety of different potential things. Typically Blood Pet, which essentially is a little bit like a Lotus Petal that only makes black mana. It means you sacrifice it to make a black mana. Or Sylvan Safekeeper, which lets you protect your combo. So the key thing here is a card called Sacred Guide. And Sacred Guide says, for one and a white mana, so a colorless and a white, sacrifice Sacred Guide, reveal cards from the top of your deck until you reveal a white card, put that card into your hand, and exile all the other revealed cards from your deck. So what's the key thing here? Well, the key thing is that you don't play any other white cards. So you don't reveal anything. You reveal your entire deck. You never reveal a white card, and then you end up exiling your deck, and then you can sacrifice your Hapless Researcher to draw a card from an empty library while you have a Laboratory Maniac out, and then, again, as we discussed with Breakfast Hulk, you should win on the spot. Now, what were the sort of issues with this deck? Well, so, obviously, you need to pay an extra one and a white to activate Sacred Guide, so... That means that your combo will cost four mana. But like I said before, if we include Blood Pet in the pile, then you get to essentially pay that colorless requirement. So it ends up costing three mana instead of four, or two in the case of other Hulk piles. So it costs a little bit more mana. And the other downside is that you don't get to play any white cards whatsoever other than Sacred Guide. However, there's a number of upsides that come with this. So the biggest upsides are that your Hulk pile, so the amount of cards that you're devoting just to your combo, is very, very small. It's compact. So you have really good card quality because you're not sacrificing a bunch of card slots to things that are just completely dead and have no role outside of the combo. And in addition, you get to layer it really well, which means that you get to sort of like slot it in alongside things like Demonic Consultation and Tainted Pact. So you can also pile into Laboratory Maniac Spellseeker, which would get you Demonic Consultation typically. And then you can Demonic Consultation away your library to then find a way to draw from an empty library and win with your Laboratory Maniac. And you can just obviously, you know, you get to play really well around common Hulk hate pieces. So if somebody plays something like Grafdigger's Cage or a Rest in Peace and suddenly your Hulk combo doesn't work anymore, what happens instead is that you just search for Laboratory Maniac, you tutor it up or you draw into it, and then you just play a Demonic Consultation as well. And then you're at exactly where you essentially were before, where you just need to find a way to draw a card, which is not hard when you have two commanders that say draw a card, and then you just win that way, without having to rely on Protean Hulk whatsoever. So as a combo, it's extremely hard to hate out, but naturally it has a few weaknesses compared to the other Hulk piles that mean that it was just one of the pillars as opposed to like the only Hulk deck worth playing. Finally, we're fast forwarding to 2020, so just essentially earlier this week, with the release of a new card called Thassa's Oracle, the game changes entirely. Because yeah. Thassa's Oracle essentially replaces Laboratory Maniac in like any of these contexts, and it's only two mana. And it says when it enters the library, when it enters the battlefield, you get a triggered ability. Also important, but I'll come back to that. that says that you look at the top X cards of your library, where X is your devotion to blue, and then you get to pick a card from among those and put it on top of your library. So not an incredible effect. However, there's this added line of text like right at the bottom where you read it and you're like, why did they add that? It seems so unnecessary, but here we are. So it says, if X is greater than or equal to the amount of libraries left in your the amount of cards left in your library, you win the game. So it's this other triggered ability that's a lot like Laboratory Maniac, except with the notable difference that, one, it's a triggered ability, which means that you can't just kill Thassa's Oracle and counter that ability, because it's kind of like you pulled the pin from the grenade and threw it. So, you know, regardless of whether or not you shoot the person who is through the grenade, it's still going to explode. And in addition, you don't need to draw a card. So not only is this less mana than Laboratory Maniac to fit into our six CMC Hulk piles, it also means that you don't need to include a draw effect. So suddenly, you've just saved like two mana on your Protean Hulk piles, right? Because you have the one from Laboratory Maniac and then the one from the Hapless Researcher that you would normally have to include. You don't have to pay any additional mana. Why? Well, because you can layer this now. You can put this into a Hulk pile that's essentially the breakfast combo pile. So Cephalid Illusionist and Nomads and Corrigan. You get to mill your library, and then you get to do that in response to the Thassa's Oracle trigger. So then when the trigger resolves, you have no cards in your library and you win because zero is greater than or equal to zero.
Yeah.
To put it as simply as possible.
I mean, that pile is amazing because like you still have like a one CMC slot free that can be like Sylvan Safekeeper, or I've seen some people like use Judge's Familiar, like that little force spike. Yeah, because it's actually good enough. And it's so hard to interact with that pile because, as you said, it's a delayed trigger. If you get rid of the Oracle, it's already too late.
So it's funny that you mentioned Sylvan Safekeeper, because when this card got spoiled, I remember being on Discord at the time and we were all looking at it and it was like just dawning on us, like sort of bit by bit, how broken it is. Like it didn't immediately strike all of us like right away. Obviously, there's like that like little period of reflection where you're thinking about all the things that it actually does. So I'm like thinking about it. I'm like, oh, wow, this really makes Sacred Hulk stupidly good. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, I can't wait to put this into my Sacred Hulk deck. And then like it dawns on me like, oh, wait, no, I can play white cards and I can just play breakfast combo alongside this. So this is actually closer to an earlier brew that I had made called Jumpman, which used the breakfast combo plus Laboratory Maniac to mill yourself into Radical Idea, which is like two mana, which is a two mana instant with jumpstart that basically says draw a card. So the idea was that, OK, well, your draw effect was in your deck, but you'd have to pay two extra mana to win. Of course, very, very compact pile because it requires very few pieces. Like you can just play Radical Idea to draw a card randomly at instant speed if you need to, and then have it in your graveyard ready to use. But like still not as good as Sacred Hulk because like the layering was not quite as tight. And so then I'm like, oh, wow, OK, this is crazy. And I can even fit my Sylvan Safekeeper into my pile. That's nuts. And then I'm like, wait, it's a triggered ability. I don't need Sylvan Safekeeper because like it doesn't matter what they kill. I can just mill my library out, let the trigger resolve, and they can kill everything that they want, and the trigger will still resolve and I'll still win. So I don't need Sylvan Safekeeper whatsoever. So that was like, oh wow, that's an extra slot that I just freed up. And then also, like, you know, people were saying, like, oh, well, what about like Force Spike and stuff like that? But it turns out with the breakfast combo, like there's no real point of interaction either. Short of something like Angel's Grace, which you can't counter anyway, so you don't need to slot that into the deck either, because you're not vulnerable to like graveyard hate, you're not vulnerable to removal, you're like vulnerable to stifle effects, but like they probably should have used that on the Hulk trigger to begin with. So like, oh, I don't even need to include this like kind of not necessarily great card, although you can kind of like squint and like look at it and say, well, it has flying and it's a 1/1 and I'm playing Timna, so maybe I can draw a card off of it, so it's not the worst. So, you know, like that, you could include that, but it's not even necessary. So now all of a sudden we're talking about, you know, the strengths of Sacred Hulk, which is that it you know, it lets you play through a lot of different types of hate. And it's also very, very slot efficient in the sense that you don't have to play a bunch of like dead Hulk pieces. But now we have wins for two or three mana, which we didn't have before. And we get to play all the white cards. You know, the most important of these being silence, because that card is completely broken. So like, yeah, it's just essentially, well, we've arrived at a point where every Hulk deck has kind of converged into one pile. And I remember when, you know, it dawned on us that, you know, this was going to be the Hulk deck going forward. I'm part of the Unified Hulk Discord server, and Sick Robot, who's the admin of the server, basically just put all the old Discord channels. So, you know, the one for Sacred Hulk, the one for Shuffle Hulk, the one for Breakfast Hulk. And he just put them, he basically just said, okay, we're just, these are archived now for like if we ever need to like go back and read them. They're not like active channels anymore, because the only Hulk decks worth playing now have Thassa's Oracle in it.
Yeah, like actually it just dawned on me when you mentioned it. Yeah, actually Judge's Familiar and Safe Keeper like are nifty cards in the deck itself. Like they're not bad cards by any measure. Like they're legit cards in any Thimnathrasus deck, whatever. But yeah, they probably should have stifled like Hulk itself or trick binded it or I don't know,
right.
Tails ended.
Right. And so if you know that people are going to play like the stifle effects and like they happen to also know that you're not on the Judge's Familiar effects, and like, oh, maybe you can get them by including that effect. Or more importantly, what you can do is you can just try to set up something like a Grand Abolisher in play and then go off on your own turn. And then it doesn't matter that they have a stifle effect at all. And the deck is just super good at doing all that type of stuff. Or like you just get it when they tap out, which is the most important thing about like all the most recent Hulk decks, which is that they can win at instant speed, which was one of the things that Breakfast Hulk could not typically do with the earliest builds. It always had to commit to winning at sorcery speed because of Dread Return. So what does winning at instant speed mean? Well, it means that you just wait for somebody else to try to win. And then when everybody fights them over that win, well, you know, what is the best type of counter spell? It's just flashing and winning on top of somebody else's win.
Exactly.
So that actually is the biggest issue with Flash Hulk. And, you know, it took all this time for me to get to there. But why is that such a big issue? Well, it's because, like we were discussing earlier, and I don't believe we were recording, but it essentially turns Flash into something like a stacks piece, where you have to respect people holding up Flash plus Hulk the entire game, because they can win at instant speed over top of your win, or at any point. So if you tap out, well, they might just try to win when you tap out. So you can never tap out. You always have to have a counterspell ready. Sometimes even multiple counterspells ready, because they're playing blue as well. So why wouldn't they be running counterspells to jam their win through? So it makes for a pretty miserable play experience, because not only is their win more efficient than your win in terms of mana, it's also they're playing cards that are just as good as yours now, because Thassa's Oracle means that they don't need to devote a ton of slots to being dead cards. It's harder for them to draw into cards that would make it so that they can no longer win at instant speed. And they can win while you're trying to commit to your own win, which typically for most other decks needs to be at sorcery speed. So, yeah. It makes for some not necessarily ideal gameplay.
Yeah, exactly. Before we started actually recording, we mentioned that Flash essentially becomes an in-hand stacks piece. Like everyone has to like dedicate at least one mana for any sort of interaction. And Flash makes like rule of law effects way, way worse now. Because typically, like stacks decks, when they would fight dedicated console decks, like Kess, for instance. And Kess would just like consult into Labman, Labjace, now Thassa's Oracle. Your best pieces of interaction were like Trinisphere or Rule of Law effects. Now you can't actually put those on the field if there's a Hulk player on the table, because it limits your own and anyone else's interaction with the Hulk player on top of them already having to have like one or two mana up just to interact with Flash itself. So that's like a horrible, horrible experience.
Yeah, you raise a very good point. I don't know if Igor wants to address that, you know, being sort of one of the resident stacks players here.
the whole Flash Hulk nightmare that's coming upon us is really making my life super difficult. Because I'm already playing Mardos, that's already, you know, I'm playing a bit worse colors than you, than most players do. How do I actually combat the damn thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, so if you're playing a deck like Bloodpod, typically your axis of interaction is playing Rule of Law type effects that make it so your opponent can only play one spell per turn, so they can't storm off, or tax effects, or like Blood Moon type effects. Now, it turns out, if you're playing Blood Moon type effects, that can be very strong, especially against four color decks. But a lot of these four color decks just need to fetch up basic island so that they can then resolve Flash. So unless that Blood Moon comes down before they ever get a chance to fetch a blue land, an island rather, then you know that axis might get turned off entirely, or at least for the most part. In addition, Rule of Law effects can just essentially enable them, because if everybody or, you know, the blue player plays something on their own turn because they want to develop a value engine or something like that, suddenly they can no longer counter things. So, you know, they just gave the green light to the Flash Hulk player to win at instant speed when they tried to develop a value engine on their own turn, which doesn't really apply to the Flash Hulk player, because the Flash Hulk player is the kind of the bully at the table. So they can play their Timna, they can play their value engines, and then just try to win on somebody else's turn. Doesn't matter. So they get free reign through those Rule of Law type effects to still develop their value engines, and develop their mana, and, you know, so on and so forth, or tutor. And finally, tax effects. Well, when you're playing the most efficient win condition in the format at just like two mana and two cards, well, tax effects are going to disproportionately affect other people because their wins will cost more mana than yours. And all the things they're doing are going to cost more mana than what you're doing. So it just kind of enables the Flash Hulk deck even more. So it's a really rough axis to fight on against Flash in particular. What happens if you take Flash out of the equation? Well, I mean, obviously Thassa's Oracle is still really good, but Consult is much weaker fighting against those axes of attacks, of attack rather. So I think that's what you would anticipate seeing with a Flash ban, is kind of a format that's more amenable to stacks as a form of interaction.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you had a great point with Blood Moon. Like, exactly for that reason, because people can just fetch up their single island from their, like, Demetrasios, Kendrith, whatever deck. I've been on Contamination for a long while now already, and I've been loving it, because it literally closes off all of their mana. So, like, even their basics just, like, produce black, they can't actually get Flash mana from their lands. And you're already playing like Linvala to shut up their dorks. You're playing like Plague Engineer in some builds to kill off their dorks. And you have up to three Null Road effects if you wish to have three Null Road effects. Being Stony Silence, Oof, and, well, Null Road itself. So that's like, you have to heavily tax access to their blue mana just to get Flash, well, like, making it more of an issue for them to cast Flash. And Flash is like the only point where I like agree on politics at the table. Like, there's a Flash player, you have to like ease down on the stacks as a stacks player, let the blue players have some mana to interact, and you gotta keep on to your Red Elemental Blasts, your Pyroblasts, your whatevers to interact yourself. So you have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, it's super weird position for a taxing player, because you can't actually stop everybody from, you know, doing their thing. Because there is one guy who just needs 1 second when everybody's pants are down.
Yeah, but yeah, that's how it's always been.
Now it's even worse.
Yeah, okay, it's a bit worse. The boogeyman of, I mean, it is the boogeyman of the format, but it's not like hell on earth bad.
I think that's the thing we need to discuss right now, because how prevalent is it going to be in the meta? Because currently, we've been talking that before the podcast, online it's like, what, 80% of the meta?
Yeah, it's about, Jesse and I have been talking about it, and it's going to ease up, because people are just like testing and want to see how good it really is, and after a while they'll go back to their pet decks and like they'll get bored of Flash, obviously. But consistency-wise, yeah, if you're going to like a league or a tournament or anything, there is absolutely no reason not to take Sushi Hulk.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But yeah,
there's no reason. There's the answer is all the reasons not to play Hulk.
That's Oracle. That one card is basically screwing up an entire sub format of the format.
Yeah, well, I'm inclined to agree. I mean, it doesn't make other decks unplayable by any stretch of the imagination. You can still come with your dedicated console deck like Zorakess. You can still come with your stacks deck like Bloodpod. You can come with your midrange deck like Hisan. You can come with Gitrog. And you will get results. You will get a win. They're not going to have turn two flash all the time. And if they do, it's not going to resolve each and every time. But I mean, you can still win, but your win percentage is much, much lower. Much, much lower than the Flash Hulk players. And if you're... Yeah, sorry, I interrupted you.
I was going to say, plus win percentage aside, the whole format got much more staler.
Yeah, yeah, because it's unified all the Hulk decks into a single one.
Exactly. Like, there's very little draw to playing other Hulk decks now. And, you know, not everybody agrees with this point, but in the past, you know, like, why would you play something like Breakfast Hulk or Shuffle Hulk? Well, because you have, like, those two mana wins. So you have, like, the speed axis that you can attack on and, like, the resiliency axis. Why would you play Sacred Hulk? It's less fast, but your card quality is, like, so much better. So, you know, you're much better in a grindy situation, which, like, a lot of games against Flash end up being, because people just don't tap out. And in addition, you have layering that can fight through hate really well. So like, if people are all packing their Grapdigger's Cages and their Rest in Pieces like they should to combat Hulk, well, if you're playing one of those other decks, you're feeling much worse about it, because pretty much all of your wins rely on the graveyard in some way. But Sacred Hulk gets around that. Now, like, every Hulk deck has the two mana wins at instant speed, and also like that backup plan that just beats all the really common Hulk hate. So it's, like I said, it's the perfected form of Hulk in a lot of respects. Mm-hmm. It's like the natural evolution of Sacred Hulk that addresses all of Sacred Hulk's like weaknesses. That, you know, even despite those weaknesses, the deck was like still really, really powerful. One of the top decks in the format. And like one of the pillars of playing Hulk, and yet, like it had, I mean, despite all of those downsides, it was still one of the pillars. And now you don't have any of those downsides anymore. So why would you play anything else?
Yeah. Plus, there's another thing. It makes cards such as Grafdigger's Cage, Rest in Peace, and Leyline of the Void mandatory in decks that can actually play them and support them. Like, I've actually seen Zur going into Grafdigger's Cage and fetching Rest in Peace. Mm-hmm. Like, stuff like that.
Yeah, the famous Yawgmoth's Will, Rest in Peace, Grafdigger's Cage synergy.
Yeah, actually, it's so sad, isn't it? But, like, they're kind of forced into, like, playing Rest in Peace in their deck. Like, as another removal piece or hate piece against Hulk, because they actually cannot outspeed Hulk. Then same goes for Kess. A lot of Kess builds, in addition to Salad Gravestone, are playing Grafdigger's Cage. And some have even gone to Torpor Orb for the Oracle trigger.
I think Kess playing, sorry to interrupt, but Kess playing Grafdigger's Cage seems incorrect to me in every situation. I would not advocate for that ever.
yeah, I agree. But I've actually seen like people just shoehorning it in because they...
Yeah.
Or addition that I actually do like is Hushbringer in Opus Thief. Now that's an actual legit card, because not only is it a two mana hate piece against Hulk that's actually really good, it doesn't disrupt any part of your deck, and it's a flying attacker for Timna. That's
counterpoint, though. Yep. Counterpoint. Opus Thief, how does it win now?
Yeah. Chrome Beats.
Yeah, because it turns out that deck is also a console deck that wants to play Thassa's Oracles. So, yeah. just like my Najeela deck, like Najeela Tempo, you know, that would seem like a logical place to play Hushbringer as well. But you don't want it to interrupt with your Thassa's Oracle lines, right? So it's kind of rough to include it.
Yeah, I know. But actually, yeah. like a lot of people been staying on Labman and Lab Jace for exactly right. that reason, so they can like support Hushbringer, which is a bit iffy. But like, I'm not against it. Plus, Chrom Beats is like legit. As odd as it sounds, it's a 4/4 hasty flyer. Sometimes that's enough.
I mean, it's a 18 turn clock, so.
Yeah, it is an 18 turn clock, but like, it's not the worst.
I think that personally, like, obviously, like, people are free to play what they want to play and tech how they want to tech, but I think that Opus Thief wants to be playing Thassa's Oracle just for how much easier it is to pull off that win condition and like the speed access that it opens up to you, as well as obviously like the easier casting cost compared to Lab Jace. And I think it's just like it's overcorrecting to shoehorn in Hushbringer in any of those decks. But like I get it because like at some point. Like, it feels really good to stick it to the person playing Hulk, but I feel like diluting your own deck to do that is it's suboptimal.
Then again, I really want to see, like, Dan's, like, Planeswalker control Tim Necrom deck. Like, he's been, like, hinting on that deck, like, playing Nicol Bolas, the 5-mana one from War Spark and stuff like that. Awkward 5-mana Planeswalkers. And apparently he's been having great success.
I do have to wonder what a meta looks like where all of a sudden you can jam like Gideon Blackblade and Nicol Bolas and have good success with them.
Yeah, I've been pondering about that. Like that, it's either like horrible, like nightmare inducing, and like you just want to end your party as your games as soon as possible, but you can't because like you're on an 18 turn clock with Gideon and Chrom. Or it's this fourth dimension thingy where no one's playing Hulk and everybody's on mid-rangey stacksy consult builds that go purely for value. That's fascinating to me somehow.
Sounds like our meta a couple of weeks ago.
No, our meta was never that bad.
Nah, come on. Actually, in our smaller meta, it was something like that this summer when there was like 3 stacks decks per pod.
Yeah, that was kind of horrible. Yeah,
That was beautiful.
No, you don't want to play 3 stacks decks and Xur. Like you don't want that. No one's having fun. No one.
Disagree. I think the stacks decks are having a great time.
I was having so much fun just watching our Xur player playing those pods and being salty as all hell, and I was laughing.
Yeah, but I don't know.
For the health of the format and everything, yes, it's not good. But for my personal enjoyment, it was nice.
I don't know. Like, as a stacks player, I don't enjoy stacks on stacks on stacks games. My perfect pod composition is, if you ask me, like a stacks deck, a Hulk deck, pre Thassa's Oracle, obviously, and something like a food chain or a console deck, like Tainted Shimmers or Kess or something. Those are the types of pods I enjoy the most.
But let's look a bit to the future. What can actually be done? What do you think is gonna be done,
Jesse?
So I think that's 2 different questions. What do I think is going to be done versus what would have to be done? So a lot of people have called for bans for Flash. You know, in addition, people would like to see Demonic Consultation banned or Thrasios and Timna banned. I think I'm going to echo a lot of my peers here and just say that when we look at the situation with the RC and obviously, you know, I know people who are in discussion with the RC, and I hear some of the back and forth and such. I think it's unreasonable to expect that anything other than a potential Flash ban is on the table. So I wouldn't get my hopes up for anything but Flash possibly being banned. And I would just qualify that in addition by saying that don't hold your breath necessarily for a flash ban either, because the RC's position, their philosophy is really in some respects antithetical to caring about the concerns about of the more competitive community. They're more concerned about banning things that are like obviously problematic in more let's say lower powered circles, and they're not necessarily concerned about power level bans. You know, that being said, I think that there is a potential angle for discussing not the power level of the deck, you know, not the impact of the power level of the deck, but how it affects people's enjoyment of the game. So the essentially the way it warps the game, and that that could potentially be something that the RC would be willing to take action on. So what can be done to improve the format? I think, like, without any point of disagreement, like, well, I think that the majority consensus is that Flash needs to be banned. Mm-hmm. What will be done, I'm not sure. It's really hard to say. Yeah. Especially with the most recent no ban announcement, and the fact that the RC has been aware of the fact that Flash has been problematic for, I want to say, at least almost a year or a year now.
Yeah, ever since, like, Hulk was unbanned, because, like, day one, they, like, already, like, just turned Karador, the old school, like, Boon Weaver Karador decks into full-out Tim Athrasius slash Hulk decks. Like, and that was okay. Like, Breakfast Hulk is incredibly strong, as you already told us. But that was, like, manageable, because you could actually interact with the pile itself at one point. But with Tassa's Oracle, it's increasingly difficult. You either have to counter the Flash, counter the Death Trigger, or have something like a Grafdigger's Cage, a Stranglehold effect, or Leyline of the Void, or Rest in Peace already on the table before Flash hits. So yeah, that's a lot of prerequisites just to stop one single card.
Yep. Indeed. Yeah. I mean, the funny thing too is that we didn't really, I mean, like you did touch upon this. We didn't really feel at quite how bad Flash Hulk was when Breakfast Hulk was sort of like the only deck that a lot of people were playing for Flash Hulk variants. Mm-hmm. And that's a simplification because there were other variants, but I can get into that after. But like Breakfast Hulk, at least in its original conception, was layering Hermit Druid. And so what was interesting is that that deck couldn't play any basics because of Hermit Druid. Yeah. And in addition, for the Flash Hulk lines, it would need to play Flash. It would get Grand Abolisher, so it's committing to this at sorcery speed, so on its own turn, which is already a lot fairer because it means that you don't have Flash sort of hanging over your head the entire time. You know, that sort of pseudo stacks effect that we were discussing. But additionally, it was vulnerable to things like Rule of Law, because you would need to resolve Flash on your own turn, and then you would have to Dread Return. So, I mean, that is a bit of a simplification because you could theoretically resolve Flash on somebody else's turn on their end step and then go into your turn and then Dread Return and win from there. So there was play around Rule of Law, but like Rule of Law at least still affected the Flash Hulk decks more than it does now, because the onus was kind of on them to be the first people to put Flash on the stack. And then with Rule of Law in play, they open themselves up to being interacted with, as opposed to the current situation, which is that the onus is never on the Flash player to be the first person to put anything on the stack. They want to be the last person to put Flash on the stack when everybody else has played their one spell per turn. And additionally, as I said before, Hermit Druid means that they couldn't play a basic island, so like they would be weaker against Blood Moon type effects. So like stacks actually had more game against Flash Hulk back then than it currently does, where it's really, really rough to be playing stacks into Flash Hulk pods, because a lot of the time, like, this is really a dismal perspective, but it almost feels like king-making some amount of the time.
For sure. Like, every Rule of Law effect is basically, like, you're enabling Hulk more because you're, like, limiting the rest of the table from interacting with the Flash or the Hulk trigger itself, anything. Yeah, and another thing, as you mentioned, like, they literally just need that one basic island from their deck, to negate Blood Moon completely. So, like, as I said, I've been, like, on Contamination, because it, like, just shuts up that shuts out that single island as well. Then again, it's not a permanent.
And it's rough, too, because Contamination is rarely something that you can play early and expect to have it stick around.
Exactly.
You typically need to get your Tana into play, or, like, if you're playing Bitter Blossom, you get that into play first.
So it's not even that fast in the end. You can't just play, like, Land, Mana Crypt, go.
Right.
You buy a turn. You do buy a turn by that. It becomes a free mana time walk for the entire table. But that's simply not good enough most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, like, another thing a flashback and would, like, positively affect the meta is decks such as Varel, such as Gave, such as Meryn, perhaps, would become, like, would rise up in the tiers as, like, Golgari X Hulk decks, like, because they still got, like, access to Pattern of Rebirth, Natural Order, so they can, like, cheat Hulk in from the deck, like, by turn three latest. And Hulk in itself essentially isn't a broken card. I mean, it is very, very strong. But Hulk without Flash is much, much fairer, especially played at Sorcerer's Period.
So I think the most, sorry to interrupt, but the most, like, elegant way to put that is that Hulk without Flash is much more in line with what the rest of the format is capable of doing.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because, like, you get piles, they're much more easily interacted with. Like, modern-day Lesser Master Core, Disciple of the Vault, and Melira piles with a sac outlet, being Warls or being, like, Viscera Seer, Carrion Feeder. You can interact, actually, with that. You can. And it's turn three, it's not turn two, it's sorcery speed, it's not instant. That's great. Also, like, other decks, like, we might even get to see, like, Tana, Timna, Bad Farm, like, just going Sickening Dreams. Or we might get, like, actual farm decks like Ikrashidiki Tana or Timna, I mean, Timna, Bruce Tarl back. Like, just getting some of those strategies, like a tier up. Or Razaketz. I haven't seen Razaketz in, like, ages. It used to be, like, one of the better decks. And then just Hulk took over.
Yeah.
Like that.
There's a lot of decks that sort of get dumped on. You know, they're caught in the crossfire, so to speak. Like, there's splash damage for people teching to hate out Flash Hulk in particular. And it affects these other decks just as much or even disproportionately.
Yeah. Sadly so, but, like, and another thing, before we started recording, we spoke about the implications of Flash in non-Hulk decks that now have access to Thassa's Oracle. As we mentioned, Xur, which is already most of the time playing a very spicy card, like Scout's Warning, and it has actually access to Flash, and they can actually just consult at the end of someone's turn, remove their entire deck, and flash in, or Scout's Warning in, Thassa's Oracle. Now they have, like, actual two targets, like Labman itself and Thassa's Oracle, just to win. Because previously, they would have to flash in the Labman and still have, like, instant speed cantrip, or hope no one removes the Labman before their draw phase. And now they can just put Thassa's Oracle in and win. It's kind of spicy, but yeah, that's good enough sometimes. Or actually, even the implications of perhaps even returning Doomsday piles into decks like Xur and Kess.
So that's an interesting point, because, you know, in all this discussion, like, something that doesn't quite come up, like, ever, is Thassa's Oracle's implication in other formats. It turns out that the card is really, really good in other formats too, just in general. So when it comes to Doomsday, for example, like, I know that people are playing Legacy Doomsday and, like, Legacy Storm decks, or, like, Underworld Breach style decks where they're just playing Thassa's Oracle as well, because it's just way better than Laboratory Maniac. So that's really cool. And it kind of feeds into your point where you were talking about, oh, does Doomsday make a resurgence because of it? I don't think it does with the existence of Flash in the format, but I think that if you subtract Flash and we just have Thassa's Oracle, Doomsday is actually, it's intriguing and, you know, at least worthy of re-exploration in the light of how trivial a lot of the piles become thanks to Thassa's Oracle.
Because a lot of players, especially like people who used to be on Doomsday and were quote unquote forced into playing like either Shimmermere lines or Consult lines because they were just more slot efficient and like easier to pull off and less affected by stacks effects. People who play Doomsday, they really do love Doomsday as an archetype. Mm-hmm. And we're really waiting for the day they could actually like slot in Doomsday back into their deck. And well, eventually, if there will be a Flash ban at some point in the future, they'll have that joyride. They'll have that experience back. That I think that's kind of nice, to be honest.
Personally, playing against Doomsday is a hell of an experience.
In Commander.
Yeah. Playing against Doomsday is always fun to me. It's always exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I used to love playing like Grenzo Doomsday. I thought that was fun.
Oh, that's always hilarious.
Anytime Doomsday comes up, it takes me way back to one of Team Turn 3's earliest videos on YouTube where Ivan got a turn 2 Doomsday win where he needed to put Time Twister into his pile so that because he had exactly the right amount of cards such that his Gitaxian Probe into his Time Twister meant that between his graveyard, deck, and hand, the Time Twister would win him the game with Laboratory Maniac out. And it actually took us a solid, I want to say, like 20 minutes to half an hour, like off camera, to figure out how he was going to win from that spot. Because we were like, oh no, like he just Doomsdayed. And what if he like can't win here? If he Doomsday passes and then like it's completely blown out, we're going to have to scrap this video because like that doesn't look good. So that was like the behind the scenes discussion where we were like, okay, well, what do we do here? And then like I said, like after like 20 or so minutes, I like start looking at his mana and I'm like, man, I wonder, like, do you have like wheel piles that you can that can get you there? And I'm like, wait, what about Time Twister? And we did the math and we were like, my God, this is going to be possibly the best episode we've put out.
I've just seen that episode. Like, I mean, I saw it like ages ago, but like I recently rewatched it like maybe 10 days ago because it was like on my random shuffle list on YouTube because like it was such a fun match to watch. Then I just like favorited it and it just came up and like I was like, yeah, that's a good pile.
Yeah, that was wild.
Yeah. Takes you back memory lane. Another card we like skipped over, actually, that has major implications from Fierce, but that we just mentioned like a couple of minutes ago, actually. Underworld Breach. Now, that's a fine card.
Yeah, and if Underworld Breach was the only broken card in this set, I'd be a happy man, because that's a fun card.
Compared to Thassa's Oracle, is it broken?
No. It is broken. It's very broken.
It's super strong, but in light of this, you're like, that's cute.
That's the thing. So Thassa's Oracle is so broken that it overshadows just how broken everything else is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like, Underworld Breach is like a really strong card. I'm not sure if it's broken, like meta-defining broken, but it sure as hell is strong. Like, its ceiling is much higher than Yawgmoth's Will. Its floor, on a floor basis, like card per card, Yawgmoth's Will is way better. If you're just going for value, but if you're going for your win, the ceiling is way higher.
So I think the floor on them is the same, which is where they do nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think what you're trying to articulate is that the average use case of Yawgmoth's Will is higher, is better. But you essentially otherwise are like completely right, where Underworld Breach is a situationally better Yawgmoth's Will. So if you think that Yawgmoth's Will is broken, then I think it's fair to extend that to Underworld Breach too.
Yeah. Like, I'm trying it out in Yidris now, like, and I'm happy. I'm pretty happy with it. Like, Yidris is just, I just recently reslotted Wastenaut into Yidris again. And I've been goldfishing a little bit, and it's been, like, amazing with Underworld Breach.
Oh, that just sounds like, fun.
Yeah, it's really good. Like, squandered resources is another way just to get, like, your excess lands into your graveyard so you can play, the initial, escape?
Yeah, escape.
The escape cost before you can, like, actually start wheeling for profit. And that's, like, great.
I actually brewed a, what I call two-card Monty Kenrith deck.
Mm-hmm.
Which basically looks to like have all of the A plus B sort of like graveyard oriented combos slash just like really, really strong synergistic combos with Kenrith in addition to like Underworld Breach. So I'm talking about like playing and I have Thassa's Oracle in there too now. Thassa, it was not good with Laboratory Maniac, but Thassa's Oracle makes it like trivially good. So yeah, obviously Thassa's Oracle and Forbidden Tutors, but I'm also playing like LED with the Wheel of Fortune combo. But in addition, I'm playing Oriok Salvagers because that combos with the LED. So if you mill into your Oriok Salvagers, then you've got your sort of clear deterministic win from there. And also playing Baron Master Wizard with Dockside Extortionist because why not?
Oh yeah, everybody's favorite reserve list card.
And the deck is just a Turbo Nos deck too with like a really, really low curve. And ideally I'm tuning it to be able to win just with main phase Stadnos effects. So yeah. That's the type of deck that I would have been like so stoked to try because it's like kind of spicy, but it's completely overshadowed by Oracle Hulk.
Yeah. Before we started recording, we were speaking about that old, Melt Banana, Yidris deck, like by, John Wolfie or yeah. Wolfie?
Jim Wolfie. Yeah.
Jim Wolfie, I'm sorry.
shout out to Jim.
Yeah. Because that deck is bonkers. That deck is so much fun to play. Like, you just hit with Yidris one and, like, you go into a Magical Christmas Land. Like, it's great.
One last thing I was going to say about Thassa's Oracle and all that. Your homeboy, Spleenface, did make a really good post on the Mana Web explaining everything why is actually the new iteration of Hulk so toxic for the format.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna link it in the show notes because that's actually a really good read.
Spleenface Morgan, mm-hmm, of Team Turn 3 fame. He is not known for any other individual content creation project. So whatever you do, don't think that he is. That's a joke. So he's actually also involved in Into the North. So go check them out as well, for sure. Because they're doing podcast content, that's great.
Yeah, Into the North. Shout out to the guys from Canada. I believe they're from Canada, right?
Yeah, as am I.
Oh, I didn't know you're from Canada.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's cool. He didn't that's say cool. All the Canadian words he was supposed to say. Like, uh-huh. Sorry.
Or maple syrup.
Yes.
Was that racist? I'm sorry.
That was bigoted. That racist. Being Canadian, not race.
Ah. Still.
Yeah, it turns out.
anyway, but like Into the North, one of the best CDH podcasts you'll find online ever. Like, it's so enjoyable.
Second best after this podcast.
We are all over the place from Commander to CDH to Modern to so many stupid things.
Okay, fine. They're the best.
MTG lore, actually, as well. We had a
from time
episode.
To time, yeah.
Yeah, there was like entire tinfoil hat episode about why Niv-Mizzet is like the strongest being on Ravnica.
Second strongest.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it was really tinfoil hatty, but whatever. We didn't mention how good Heliod actually might be in Sissé decks, because there's been a resurgence of Captain Sissé because of Heliod the Suncrowned, because it's a simple A and B combo that you can fetch half of it with Captain Sissé fetching Heliod, and being Celestia colored, you have a lot of ways to tutor Walking Ballista or Triskelion, onto the field with protection such as Whale of Summer, Autumn's Whale, Silence, Grand Abolisher. Now that's a spicy deck I like.
Is Nyxia playing that?
Yeah, he's playing that version. Actually, he played it yesterday, and it seemed smooth enough. Even though I'm still convinced the Planeswalker version with chain whale is perhaps the better and superior Captain Sisse version. But anyway, I'm glad to see Captain Sisse back in 2020. Like
that actually reminds me of a meme from the other day. And so this is a meme that I was joking around with Shaper about how there's now a new tier zero parasitic deck in this Oracle Hulk meta. So it turns out green-white Sisse is actually a pretty strong counter to Thassa's Oracle, because Thassa's Oracle makes you mill out your library and then win with the trigger. But if you can force somebody to draw with your green-white Sisse, Thassa's Oracle, it turns out, is not a laboratory maniac. So you can actually just kind of get them by forcing them to draw from an empty library, even with the Thassa's Oracle trigger.
You're thinking of Silvala.
Green-white Silvala. Yes. So green-white Silvala, it turns out, might actually be the strongest deck in the format for counter Oracle Hulk. Even though that's not true, because technically they don't have to have zero cards in their deck to win. They only need like two or three, depending on what they want to play around. Depending on the amount of cards that they have left in their deck, they might be able to mill such that they have a few cards left in their deck and they get around that. So obviously being facetious, but all this to say, what type of things can we do to tech against Thassa's Oracle?
As the saying goes, don't let your memes be dreams. Do it.
I mean, we can most likely coerce Nyxia into playing Silvala.
He's been playing Silvala ever since they banned Paradox Engine.
Yes, because that's the type of man he is.
Yeah, because he had Paradox Sisse built and he was having great success, and then suddenly Paradox Engine got banned and he was like, what am I going to do now? And then he built Keycar because me and Mate forced him into building Keycar.
Yep.
And the deck's great, actually. He's been having success. But he just ported the Sisse into Silvala. And in itself, Silvala is a fine deck.
Plus, Nyxia gets to do Nyxia things in CDH and play huge things for basically no mana.
Yep. Yeah, and he, for some reason, will never cut, what's that 6-mana stacks piece from War of the Spark? Statue of Bolas?
Yeah, Godfarrow's Statue or whatever.
Yeah. He actually, we had a really, really grindy match. I think it was Gitrog, Bloodpod, Silvala, and I'm not sure, Circu or Narset, something like that. It turned into a really grindy stacks match, and that piece was killing us, because I'm not sure, at the end of his phase or in his upkeep, everybody loses one life.
End of his turn.
Yeah. The game went out for so long that everybody was nearly wiped out because of that. It was horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be the deck for it. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, because actually you had to use your removal on Gitrog or Narset pieces, Haste Enablers and Fast Mana for the Gitrog, so when you remove it, it doesn't come back. And because of that, the gods... Pharaoh Statue was just killing him the entire board while he was gaining life because of Silvala, because she actually gains life.
Yep.
She's quite nifty. I used to like the old version of her, that used to just play Aetherflux Reservoir, just goldfishing in green white. That used to be fun.
I mean, obviously, I have a soft spot for green white Silvala because we did feature her in a lot of our old school videos. Because of Carlos a longtime fan of her and a very competent pilot of that deck. That deck is It can be scary in the right hands. The issue is that it can also just be absolutely terrible in the wrong hands, and just hand the win to other people. So it's one of those decks that it's like, let's just say, don't recommend it. And don't recommend it to anybody. And if you have somebody who has put in the work and the time and suffered through it, then like it can win games, but like overall it's not quite strong enough.
Yeah, but I mean, green white Silvala is like the best Silvala. I mean, Brostorm is obviously the stronger deck, but like green white Silvala has so much potential for something to happen in the future that just turns it like into a tier one strategy at one point. Because it has everything. It gets you mana, it gets you life, and it gets cards. And decent colors. It's a pretty good deck. It just needs something like on the level of Paradox Engine. Because when Paradox Engine got released, Arkham Dexen and Sissi just like went up into tier one categories. Like that was great for them.
Well, I don't know about tier one, but maybe... Yeah. Tier 1.5, tier 2, but I don't really love talking about tier lists in general anyway.
I mean, I'm just paraphrasing, like, they got a huge boost because of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Now to pull this train back on the rails, you were going to talk about the ways of combating.
Yes. Well, speaking of white to begin with, a lot of people have been talking about Angel's Grace as a potential counter for Thassa's Oracle, because obviously... Being that it is a trigger, if you can't lose the game when the trigger resolves, well, then that trigger doesn't get back on the stack quite so easily. So you would need some way to bounce it back to your hand, or like put it in the graveyard and then put it back into play. You know, some way essentially of putting it back into play from another zone. Because as far as I know, there's no effects that trigger ETBs when things are on the battlefield, at least in Magic, maybe in other card games. And then so that's an interesting angle of attack, and also it's one that I've encountered playing Sacred Hulk as a counter, because it's kind of like a similar blind spot for Sacred Hulk, but Sacred Hulk was not quite as dominant in the meta back when, you know, back before Thassa's Oracle existed, so not everybody was considering what tech do we need to play to counter it. So I had encountered, I think, at least on one occasion, Angel's Grace being used as a counter, and then I would need to find another way to draw a card because I had Laboratory Maniac in play. But it turns out it's even more effective against Thassa's Oracle, short of them putting Grand Abolisher into play first, which, you know, that's sort of the caveat with all of these counters that I'm going to discuss, is that there are ways for the Oracle Hulk player to play around them, the Sushi Hulk player. Another really popular one is Stifle.
Yeah, Stifle is like actually getting main decked. Like just I believe it was like a month and a half ago, like we had a Tassiger player stifle some random effect. I'm not sure what it was. Like some it probably stifled that Arbor Elf that was about to untap like a forest that had both Utopia Sprawl and Wild Growth on it. Something minuscule. Anyway, I was like, why are you playing Stifle? And he was like, it's a good card. And I, at that point in time, I wasn't sure if like I would like put Stifle in any of my blue decks whatsoever. And then now it's nearly mandatory, like Stifle or...
How the tables have tabled, eh?
Yeah, like Stifle and Trickbind and what's the card from Core 20?
Tail's End.
Yep. Yeah, they're like actually legit now, like... Can't hate of them. They're like really good now.
I mean, yeah, they've edged into play more playable tier. Obviously, you still feel a little silly with like your Stifle in hand if people are pulling off certain win conditions where it doesn't interact. And like maybe you had just been holding on to it to try to like nab something more significant than a fetch land, because like, let's be honest, like the floor case that people like to throw around where you just stifle a fetch land is kind of like a meme, because like you're hurting one opponent and then, you know, you still have three other opponents or two other opponents to worry about. So it's not a real counter spell. So it does have like a lot of blind spots. That being said, I think I'm not like so against it. Like, I could see myself theoretically playing it in some decks just because it is that effective against Hulk. And especially if 80% of the meta is Hulk, I would much more strongly consider it.
I've actually slotted Tail's End into JVP because and actually the other two modes are actually legit. Like activating, negating activate ability, pretty legit, and negating any legendary spell, still pretty good because like everybody has at least one in their command zone. Since the Planeswalkers became legendary spells, and a lot of Planeswalkers such as Narset and Ashiok are seeing play, you can easily like hold it up as a removal counter. Tail's End perhaps is the best of the bunch, in my opinion, even though the split second on the Trick Bind is really good.
So I think the main point I wanted to raise is that there's like some more like slower and deliberately controlling decks that would maybe want to look at narrow effects like this. Obviously, like, I will tend to value one mana interaction well above two mana interaction in general, which is why I tend to prefer Stifle over some of these other options. But the more important point I wanted to make is that for a lot of decks that are trying to be proactive, you would much rather have counter spells that actually defend your combo at the same time as being able to be used defensively, so offensively and defensively, which is why like I'm less high on things like Stifle and Tails and stuff like that, because they're very, very reactive. They're not going to protect your combo the vast, vast majority of the time. So they end up being purely these defensive tools, and I'm personally not the biggest fan of that, but obviously there are decks that might want to have more of those tools.
Yeah, I was thinking of like Tail's End and Stifle and Trick Bind and stuff like Tassier, for instance, or perhaps Four Color Control, slower Jace builds if Jace is even a deck. Recently, I've even seen Kess players slotting in Shadow Adult because, well, it does cantrip and it does have its uses, actually.
Stuff Shadow like of Doubt is super spicy. I love it.
Yeah. I recently played Kess on a League of Ours. It shut Yisun down completely. Like on the crucial verse 4 turn, it was beautiful. Just like it's 2 mana. No one expects it because like no one plays it anymore. It cantrips. It's great. I love Shadow Doubt. It's such an underrated card in my opinion.
Especially now, and it just so happens that it counters so many more spells than a lot of the previously mentioned cards. So yeah, like for me, the fact that it counters things like tutors and obviously like some of those activated abilities, Xur type things, in addition to replacing itself, that's kind of the important part, makes it like way more appealing.
Yeah.
Again, it still feels kind of reactive from my perspective, for the type of decks that I like to play.
Yeah.
But yeah, very, very spicy, very cool card.
Two more cards that like got a huge bump in usage. They were previously already good, but like now, if you're playing white, you're probably going to play both of them if you got a space. Like Aven Mind Sensor and Containment Priest. These guys just became really, really good. Like Mind Sensor was always one of the better creatures in CDH. But Containment Priest was like, if your meta is very like reanimator heavy, Hulk heavy, you're going to consider it. You're going to play it. But now it's really good.
Yeah, I want Aven Mind Sensor and like all my Timna decks now.
Yeah, it's such a good card. Just like if you got 3 mana and it's not hard up to keep 3 mana up for like a 2-1 Flash Flyer that like will draw you cards, will break parity. It also stops tutors, fetch lands, Hulk itself. It's really good. And Containment Priest is less good because it only interacts with like reanimator strategies and Hulk strategies. But a 2 mana, a 2-2 flash creature that can interact with them and draw your cards off Timna is decent. And worst case scenario, if someone's attacking you with Najeela or with Timna and you seem like you don't have blockers, that can be a blowout.
Yeah, I've seen that one happen.
Yeah, I'm always glad when like I can block a Najeela, like especially like, because she gets overbearing very quickly. People, if you haven't played against Najeela enough times, like she creates so many tokens in such a short span of time and becomes so like overbearing, and the pressure is really on in like a turn or two.
When she pro tip,
yeah,
don't play against Najeela, play with Najeela.
Pro tip, I've been slotting like Zealous Persecution, like all of my decks that can like support it, just to stop Najeela.
Don't try to fight it, just become it.
Nah, I'm still gonna be on Bloodpod. Like, I just love the deck. I know.
And in my heart, there's only place for 1/3 mana, the Warrior Chick.
It's actually a dude, but okay.
Isn't Najeela a chick?
Najeela's a chick, yeah.
Najeela's a chick. Yeah. If you're speaking about Alesha, Alesha's a dudette.
Alesha is,
lore-wise, born as a guy, but...
Lore-wise, Alesha is definitely a trans character.
Yeah, but her, like, I don't know if you read the Khan story, like the little tidbits they used to upload when Fate Reforged came out, but like Alesha's story is like the best. Mm-hmm. It was like really short and sweet. I used to love those when they used to post them on the motherboard.
Way back when story.
Yeah, yeah, when we still had like decent magic lore.
What else is used? The cage?
Yeah, so obviously things like Wrathdigger's Cage and Rest in Peace are still sort of as good against Hulk as always, with the caveat that that type of effect is just way less effective in general because of the backup lines of just manually assembling consultation, demonic consultation with Thassa's Oracle. So that's one of the biggest strengths and the biggest things that Hulk decks now have sort of acquired, and what makes them even more obnoxious is the fact that like it's just way harder to use the static hate pieces against them because they just have such strong ability to pivot into lines that essentially get around all forms of hate.
Yeah, like as we said, like if you're playing against Hulk, you don't want Trinity Sphere, you don't want Rule of Law, because it hinders the rest of the table to interact with Flash itself and Hulk. But then again, they have like literally a pure consultation line by just removing their deck and putting Thassa's Oracle. That's free mana. It gets around stuff like Deafening Silence, because all you need to play is Demonic Consultation is your non-creature spell on that turn, and then you can still land Thassa's Oracle.
So you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why like the current Flash Hulk builds are so strong, because they can actually just port into dedicated console decks if need be. It's a two card free mana combo, and it's very good.
Yeah, I mean, basically what we see is all the Hulk decks have been unified into one Hulk deck, but in addition, decks like CST, so Consult, Scepter, Thrasios, are kind of also folded into Hulk, because those decks, I mean, like, the biggest difference now is that, like, oh, okay, do I want to play artifact mana? And because, like, then, sure, maybe there's a case for playing CST, but, like first of all, like, mana dorks tend to just be kind of stronger because they're faster, they're one mana versus two mana, and additionally, like, you just have the power of Flash, so, like, why am I playing Scepter anymore? Because, like, the Scepter decks, like, the big draw to them after Paradox Engine was banned was just the slot efficiency that playing Consultation brought. But now the Hulk decks are also super slot efficient and also fight on that same axis of being able to manually assemble Demonic Consultation in a Laboratory Maniac type effect. So that's another sort of casualty of Thassa's Oracle and Flash Hulk is even seemingly completely distinct archetypes, like the Thrasios Timna, like, you know, sort of artifact Scepter type decks, like there's way less of a strong pull towards those.
Yeah, exactly. Like literally our CSD player from our like group. Like we have like a group of 10 people that we usually like make one or two pods per week. We get to play CDH like actually a lot, which I'm glad about. He's begrudgingly porting into Flash Hall because there is literally no reason to play CSD.
I mean, maybe you like shiny rocks.
Yeah, you can like your shiny rocks, but they don't draw cards of Timna.
It's fair.
But yeah, like some decks are getting like entire hall over. It's like CST, it's a deck, but it's not. But there's actually no reason to play CST when you literally have Hulk.
Yeah, particularly without Paradox Engine.
Yeah. Then again, like, what else got way weaker because, like, Tassa's Oracle got printed? Like, obviously, Consult got another Labman effect, possibly the best Labman effect. But then again, ironically, Consult decks, like dedicated Consultation decks, like Kess or Xur, or Sirku, if you will. Because actually, I think that guy is legit. They're lower in usage now because you can just add green and like go Hulk yourself with all the same lines. So that's another casualty. Like we're actually losing dedicated console decks to Hulk because they can as play a dedicated console game as good as the console decks themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny because I can't remember if we were talking about this while recording or before, but I would love to see the meta where like Flash is banned and we still have Thassa's Oracle. Obviously, I sort of have like a selfish motivation for this, which is that I think Najeel is like one of the biggest winners from that because Najeel's backup win condition used to be Chase, Wielder of Mysteries, but Thassa's Oracle is such an upgrade over that in that deck. And Thassa's Oracle has even led me to start now experimenting with Ad Nauseam in that deck, whereas before that was not really tenable with Jace. Thassa's Oracle makes it way more attractive to just Ad Nause and then like manually assemble your 3-mana 2-card combo off of like the 20 or 30 cards you just drew, as opposed to, you know, your 2-card 5-mana combo from before. So really, like Thassa's Oracle on its own, I think like Najeel is possibly the biggest winner from that because it not only gains a better backup win condition that fights on a completely different axis from Najeela, but theoretically it also means that deck gets to be an Ad Nauseam deck too.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was not you really couldn't support it because like Najeela getting removed in response to Ad Nauseam basically made it that you would whiff like on your Ad Nauseam, and you know, now you don't need a board to win so much anymore.
Yeah, because like Najeela is already like really, really low on the curve, like what, 1.7 or less?
More like 1.63 or 1.65.
Yeah.
And that's including Nauseam in the actual deck.
Yeah, but you got like a 0.2 average CMC decrease because you just cut Lab Jace, who was 4, for like Thassa's Oracle, who's 2. It doesn't look like that much when you compare the numbers, but it's a huge upgrade. Those 2 life you save could be 5 or 6 more cards that you see.
Yeah, but I think the biggest thing that you get out of it is the fact that the Thassa's Oracle lines are so much more mana efficient.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Another winner would be like Kenrith, who could like actually play a reanimator strategy with Thassa's Oracle. He could actually just go like infinite mana and or Doomsday, because we were talking about Doomsday, because actually you can just play anything in Kenrith.
So the thing is that deck could always do those things even without Thassa's Oracle. Like it becomes better at doing those things, but I don't know that it's like quite on par with getting like I said, like in Najeela, that whole really powerful backup win condition, as well as like a decent reason to run Ad Nauseam, which was like, other than like Chain of Vapor, probably like the single best card that Najeela like couldn't really run or didn't want to run. And now like that deck just gets to play all the best cards, which is all I ever wanted when I played Magic. Like that's all I just want to play the best cards.
Isn't that how like you start Najeela? Because you just want to play like high value cards.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to play the best cards. Even when I play Legacy, like, well, especially when I used to, play a four color deck with Deathrite Shaman. I just wanted to play like all the best cards and like stretch my mana base to play all the best cards.
Yeah, like check files. Like yeah, Leovold and
exactly. For me, that's the most fun thing is playing these crazy good cards.
Did you play the recent check pile decks like with Renin 6 before it got banned?
No, so I had taken a break from Legacy before Renin 6, before I had a chance to really pick up Renin 6, which I'm pretty happy about because yeah. That card was obviously going to get banned.
Yeah, the price increase was like stupid. Like it rose up to like at one point 98 euros. Like that's what, $105, $110 at one point, like 2 weeks before it got banned.
Mm. We might be moving crazy. A little off topic though.
yeah. Again. But yeah, like.
Is there anything else to actually add to the main topic?
Yeah, like a lot of decks would get a big boost if Flash got banned and we still kept Tassa's Oracle. Because inherently, Tassa's Oracle isn't the problem. It's only the combination with Flash that gives it the ability to have such an effective pile. Another lab mana.
To refer to your point when you touched Legacy a bit, when Legacy was in dire straits because Flash Hulk was a thing, they banned the obvious problematic card, which was Flash.
Mm-hmm.
Was Hulk itself not a problem?
No.
In a format as degenerate as Legacy,
yeah,
Flash is still like the best thing you can do.
Isn't Flash also restricted in Vintage?
Yes.
So there you go.
Yeah, no, Flash is just a badly designed card. I think there's no ifs, and or buts about that.
It was fine in, you know, time when the creatures had really crappy abilities. It was fine.
Oh, you mean like Arena Rector?
It was before.
Academy Rector, I mean.
It was before Rector, even.
It was card printed in Mirage, yeah. So... Yeah, maybe a bit before. Maybe. Okay.
Definitely before Rector was a thing.
Yeah, but it's not a reserve list card.
And then they started making, you know, actually good creatures.
Yeah, and that's the biggest issue with Protean Hulk in general. Even more so than Flash. Like, Protean Hulk gets stronger the more good creatures are printed. So, like, sure, it was fine to unban it, but, like... Because, like, at the time, there was nothing particularly dangerous to do with it in sort of more casual circles, even though I take some issue with that assertion, even based on, like, some recent games that I've played. But, like, yeah, so obviously, like, Flash as an enabler for, like, stupidly degenerate things with Protean Hulk is really dumb, with Academy Rector is really dumb.
The thing you said about casual decks not being so casual anymore, game has been evolving for couple of years. Decks that were, you know, deemed not super casual couldn't actually face today's casual decks. They would just get stomped way back when.
That's fair. I would tend to agree. You know, for full disclosure, the game that I had played was not, I didn't lose to Flash Hulk, I lost to Reanimated Hulk, sacrificed to Greater Good. So it was basically more of like an Abzan-style Reanimator deck,
mm-hmm.
But it just so happened to have an infinite combo with Protean Hulk and like Sac Outlets. That was like pretty hard to interact with, given the tools that I was playing in, at the time, my more lower-powered deck. So it just so happens that people are doing degenerate things with Protean Hulk, even in more casual circles. It just so happens that that Flash Hulk is not quite as omnipresent in those contexts. But I still lost, I think, on turn 5. And I was playing maybe like a sort of more mid-power deck.
Oh, well, moral of the story is, however you get a Hulk, it can go infinite.
You never put the Hulk in a deck to do cool things and get, like, I got 6 mana dorks, people. You never do that.
No, that's untrue. Like, a year ago or so, I played Nigella, like, Nylea, but the old one, like, not the recently printed one, obviously. And my Hulk got me Woodland Bellower, who got me, I believe it was Eternal Witness.
To get your Protean Hulk back?
Yes, obviously.
Wow. Obviously. So clearly the most powerful usage of Protean Hulk is to put Solemn Simulacrum into play. Because the value is unreal.
The thing we mentioned a couple of hours ago, Nyx Bloom Ancient, just putting him into play is pretty legit.
Actually, like, it started out as a joke, but, like, people been trying because, like, it's a mana tripler, and the way Flash works is it asks you for the payment once the creature hits the field. So, like, Nyx Bloom Ancient is actually online, and it triples your mana, and you can use that to pay for it. So you can either use it as a really awkward ritual effect, or actually you can get, like, a legit, really, really early Nyx Bloom Ancient and just have a mana tripler, like, at turn 3.
But instant speed, which is the best thing. Guess what?
Yeah.
Yeah, with four lands in play, you get to just pay to keep your Nyx Bloom Ancient around when you flash it in. And then from that point on, you're untapping with, like, 12 mana. That seems pretty good for, like, turn 5.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be lands. It's any permanent that taps
for
mana.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, no.
Any permanent that taps for mana. So, like, if you have Dorks or some fast mana rock, you can get, like, a turn 2 and, like, be really happy. Just, like, it's not bad. And another nifty thing, it's an enchantment creature. Like, actually, in some sort of, I don't know if a farm deck would want to play this or why would it play it, but Academy Rector can fetch it.
Flash Rector into it too.
Yeah, if you're not going for, like, omniscience, you can get that.
But hey guys, at least I can't cast Braids. It's good that we have Flash in the format, but Braids is just too much.
Yeah, definitely. Braids is overpowered. I would never. I would quit Magic if they unban Braids.
No, I mean. I think Braids is fine for CEDH, at least.
Braids is fine as long as she's not in the command zone, and that's it.
I'd argue she's fine in the command zone. It's probably not fun if you're playing, like, a bunch of rituals, but, like, I'd argue it's okay.
Personally, I would also say okay, but, you know, if RC is going to make a stand on it's going to be broken if it's a command zone, fine, then just bring back Banda's Commander, because Commander is already a complex format. And if you figure out Commander as a new player, you can figure out what Banda's Commander means.
Most likely, yeah. Yes.
So, for what it's worth, I don't disagree with the majority of the Rules Committee's bans, because, like, a lot of the cards on the ban list do seem like they'd be problematic for like lower power playgroups, like the playgroups that the ban list is intended to be for. But, like, when you look at it from, like, the more high power perspective, then, like, yeah, sure, a lot of those cards are, like, totally fine.
Even not high powered, even something like Coalition Victory shouldn't be on there.
Right, I don't agree with literally everything on the ban list. Yeah,
bunch of those cards are just like, what are we doing? Honestly,
a lot of the cards for sure. But the thing is, it turns out that the Rules Committee's, like, process for deciding what they want to ban or unban tends to inherently skew towards, like, not changing things, because, you know, they try to be, like, relatively conservative, yeah, in terms of their process. So, like, they're, you know, they pretty much have to vote, like, on whether or not they even care enough to unban something, and then at that point they need to vote on whether or not they want to unban it. So, like, if they look at something like Coalition Victory, it's like, well, like, I don't really care. Like, who cares? So, like, let's not even discuss it.
Speaking of RC and CAG, what made me super sad was people being dicks on the internet towards CAG people, especially Shivam.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, just the RC in general. Like, people, please be respectful. You may not, like all the decisions that the RC makes, but you know, they're still people. They don't deserve to be abused just because you disagree with them.
Yeah, I mean, we in our private Facebook chat, we made many jokes on the account of this decision, but we didn't go out and actually, you know, tweeted the angry messages. Because why would we?
We're reasonable adults, like, who enjoy the game. At the end of all, everything, it's a game.
Yeah.
Sheldon, I might not agree.
Sheldon and the crew, yeah, sure, we disagree with a bunch of things that they decided, but fine. We'll still play the game.
Like, nothing happened that would make, like, quit Magic just because they didn't ban. Like, I might have a smidgen less fun, like, because at one point I'm sure I'll get, like, probably a bit salty, like, if I'm on a table, like, with two Flash Hulk players and I, like, lose the entire day. But in the end, what's preventing me from playing Flash as well? Nothing. Just my personal preference.
Yep.
Then again, like, I don't know. I would like to see a world where Flash is banned. Just because some other decks would emerge. And it would be nice and spicy. Like.
But if we don't get it, we're not going to be assholes about it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that's the most important thing, I think. It's disagree with them all you want, but just keep it civil.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are people at the end of the day with families, like, they're not the magic devil, as people try to make them.
One of the things that's stopping me from being asshole towards my customers who are being assholes towards me is, okay, I don't actually know what's going on in their day right now.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Because a person is snapping for, let's say, what literally happened a couple of weeks ago, a pack of honey. And I was like, sir, calm down with a stern tone, but sorry. I didn't go full rage on him because I don't know why is this person actually snapping because of a pack of honey. Because if you're going to rage about that small thing, something is going badly in your life, and I'm not just going to be part of that.
That's a fair assessment too.
It's also just better for your own mental health to try not to get involved with other people's moods and just try to maintain a sort of calm and in the face of that type of thing.
I'm working as a waiter, so my mental health is already gone way down the drain. But I try to approach things as civil as possible.
Yeah, right. Then again, I think we went off topic for like the 20th time in like half an hour again.
I think that's the general. I mean, this is tightly connected to the topic, not being assholes to the people in the RC and CAG.
Oh, yeah, well, okay.
This is something that I consider really important to say, at least while we're talking about the most recent bans and lack thereof.
I'm pretty happy that nobody I interact on Twitter was actually the asshole in the whole thing.
You say that, but that's not true. There was a lot of people who were quite rude.
Nobody that I interact with was an asshole.
Oh, okay. Sure.
I'm happy about that because I know there was assholes on the internet. Because surprisingly, part of the population is always going to be an asshole because that's just rule the numbers. And people have some frustrations they have, and they're going to vent on some stranger on the internet that caused them some harm or wrong.
Right. And it really doesn't benefit anybody to be rude to people from the CAG or the RC. Yeah, like, it's you're not going to get your way that way.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, okay, you call them names and everything, and guess what? Flash is still legal.
Yeah. It's probably going to stay legal for a very long time as well.
Hell, it might stay legal longer one day for each insult they took in last week.
Oh, so it's never getting banned.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, probably. But, oh well, we can live in a flash-free and in a flash-full world. I mean, we're going to adjust. It's the people went haywire when Protein Hulk was unbanned. I'm sorry. And, okay, there was Sacred Hulk, there was Shuffle Hulk, there was Breakfast Hulk. Extremely strong decks. Very, very strong. But never overbearing. Other decks managed to persist, to get great results. there is absolutely nothing stopping like wizards from printing something that will actually make other archetypes in EDH eventually on par with the power level that Sushi Hulk is right now. What that would be for each individual archetype and color and general and whatever combination, I don't know. That's up in the air. But like, Magic is an evolving game. They're always going to print new cards. Eventually, something will come out and average out the power level or lower it again or rise it or heighten it, whatever.
Or something's going to break Hulk and then it's going to get banned. That's also an option.
Oh, something that broke Hulk already came out.
I mean, Flash. I want to say Flash. Then it might just break Flash and then it's going to get banned.
Probably. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it would have to make Flash much more attractive to people at lower power levels. But like, the issue with the argument that like people at lower power level aren't going to play Flash because like the combos are like too easy, and so on and so forth. Like, it's interesting because on the one hand, it kind of leads you to feel like no ban list ought to be necessary from that perspective, because like, you know, if individual groups are, you know, not playing these cards because of how broken they are, or like, you know, they can kind of like house rule them away and stuff like that, then like, you know, why are certain cards hailed as problematic as they actually are? Like Leovold, for example. Leovold like plus Wheel is really, really strong, but like, why would more why would lower power tables play Leovold plus Wheel and not play Flash and Hulk?
That also that argument becomes a bit more dicey once you add Rule Zero into the mix. If we have Rule Zero as a thing, which we do, why even bother with the ban list? If you're supposed to, you know, talk it out with people before game anyway.
I mean, we're CDH players, so like, no. we expect a certain power level and expect a certain skill cap when we sit down with people who are here to CDH.
Yeah, but Rule Zero is here to actually establish, okay, what are we doing, guys? Is there some kinds we don't want to see? This, that? Okay, let's, you know, just talk it out. That's what Rule Zero is supposed to be.
Yeah, but like, Rule Zero is such an iffy thing, like,
That's what I'm saying. That changes the whole equation a bit.
That's true.
Well, I just don't know that Rule Zero really applies in any situation other than a stable playgroup. Because, like, are you seriously going to get over your social anxiety and talk to a stranger and be like, hey, before we start this game, are you playing X, Y, and Z? Because I would prefer it if you didn't. Like,
is expected of us.
But who actually does that?
Sorry. No, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's one thing to say like, oh, okay, like how strong is your deck? How competitive is your deck? It's another thing to say that I don't like playing with X, Y, and Z specifically.
I mean, I'm not here being a proponent of Rule Zero. I'm just saying that's the problems it establishes as a rule itself.
Because what I want to say, there are actually people who ask about the power level of your deck if we play casual, because CDH is another thing. Mm-hmm. You know what you're getting into when you go on a CDH table. But when we're playing casual, people are like, I don't like to number decks like on power level from 1 to 10. I think that's baloney. But for simplicity's sake, I'll power level them like that. So is your deck a 10? Is it an 8? Is it a 6? Can you lower it? Can you take this out? That's fine. If you want to equal out and take your 5 deck to a 6 table, that's great. But if the social clause is like, I don't want you to play this card because it's unfun, because I have to, I don't know, I don't want you to play Windfall because I don't want to discard my win conditions by accident and I have no way to get them back in my hand or on the field, please remove it from your deck. That's where it gets like really annoying and iffy, because some people actually do that, and now that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah, so I guess like I really just had one last thing that I sort of desperately wanted to say while I have a platform, which is you may have noticed like this entire time I've been trying, not always successfully, but trying very hard to not say casual and to not say CEDH, mm-hmm. And instead refer to like lower power versus like higher power, you know, versus like extremely high power. Because in my mind, we really need to get away from this like sharp distinction between like CEDH and casual, mm-hmm. for multiple reasons. First of all, because I don't think casual is like one monolithic thing. And I think that if you only think in terms of CEDH and you only think in terms of casual, like you're missing a lot of granularity. You know, like casual can mean like, oh, my deck that wins like on turn five some amount of the time, but like not consistently. And for other people, that might be like competitive because like, oh, if you ever win on turn five, that's like way too soon. But you know, and that's just like individual's perception of power level. So what's a little bit better than that is like the number system, but like Rob was saying, like the power system is not good either, or the pure number system, because that also lacks granularity. To say
there is also a problem with the number system. We Magic players are so notoriously bad at actually objectively rating our decks.
Exactly. I just right. want to digress. I actually agree with you. But there's a reason why we, at least Igor and I, use the phrase CDH and EDH. Because in creation, when we would speak about the power levels and different like echelons of competitiveness in the EDH community, it gets very convoluted because of language barriers. So when talking amongst ourselves in our playgroup and with our local players, we tend to use shortened phrases like CDH for like higher power levels, like tournament levels and stuff like that, and like casual for like lower power levels, like kitchen table to high to mid power and stuff like that. There's a understanding between us because in creation there's simply a language barrier that prevents us from like abridging like the term. That's why
sure,
you use this.
Sure. I get that. And that's obviously going to be like always sort of arbitrary from a certain perspective, because like, again, you might consider CEDH like 7 through 10, and then maybe other people consider CEDH only 9 and 10. Right. And I'm sort of more in like that stream if I had to be in one of the streams. But again, like I just prefer to sort of move away from that like false dichotomy entirely. And because one of the things also I think that comes out of this sharp delineation distinction between CEDH and casual is that, you know, the RC only cares about like more casual players, or they should only care about more casual players, or that, you know, there's different, target audiences for what the RC, you know, has to do or should do as part of their, stewardship of the format. I think that it's on the RC to make Commander the best possible format it can be. Exactly. For everybody. And while, you know, it's true that there might be more people playing at lower power levels than people playing at higher power levels, I don't think it's actually like quite as clear cut as that, in the sense that like there's still a lot of people playing like really, really strong decks, like at all over the power level spectrum. That don't necessarily fit into like the vision that the RC has for like what the vast, vast majority of people playing Commander are. And if their vision of what, you know, their sort of like target audience is like people who play Commander for like, you know, maybe 3 hours a month on average, or like, you know, who play with just their group of friends at home, like on the kitchen table, you know, I don't think that's inclusive enough. I don't agree with the argument from Sheldon that Commander is a lot of things to a lot of people, but it can't be like everything, for, you know what I mean? Like the way that the RC regulates Commander can't be for everyone. I think that that's just not true. I think that if you look at like the popular opinion, like there's a lot of people who feel that things that are on that aren't banned should be banned. You know, take like Cyclonic Rift as a great example. Like, a lot of people absolutely hate that card. It's not problematic in competitive Commander, but like, people who play really high power Commander could understand that card getting banned. It's more problematic in lower power circles probably than a card like Leovold is, to be completely honest. And then you take cards like Flash, which are just a net negative on the format, because like, you know, the people who do play with it sort of very broadly and overwhelmingly dislike playing with it. And it's little to do, it's not as much to do with its power level as it is to do with the play patterns that it engenders. So that's really, I think, where the philosophy document that the RC put out, where they talk about how they don't explicitly want to ban for power level reasons or for competitive play, you know, even that philosophy could still be used to justify a Flash ban. And I think that this is a really important thing that needs to be expressed. Banning Flash does not need to be a capitulation, or doesn't need to be like an olive branch to the competitive EDH community. What it can be is basically just taking a stance saying that, you know, we ban cards because of the play experience that it creates for people who play our format.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point, actually. And like, I you've probably seen it. Like, there were a lot of petitions started, like, to, they were trying to force basically the RC to rethink the ban Flash. And like, a lot of people like signed the petitions. I don't know if it's actually the correct way to do it, because just sending them a petition like ban this because we don't like it is a bit shallow and flat and doesn't like introduce the problem to them why we want
right.
Plus, but, we have a small problem. Sorry to interrupt, but if they, you know, ban Flash because of the petition, it sets a standard that anybody can pressure the RC with enough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That I was gonna get to that as well, because it doesn't look good.
Well, you know, that on the one hand, that seems like it on the surface, that seems like you're right, you know, that the RC shouldn't be able to be pressured into banning a card. But if like you are able to demonstrate like a large consensus of people wanting a certain card banned and not enjoying that card being in the format, you know, like, is that pressuring, or is that just like articulating that position? And like, you know what I mean? Like, the RC needs to get that feedback. Otherwise, cards like Paradox Engine wouldn't have been banned, or like Leovold wouldn't have been banned.
RC would say it as being pressured.
Sure, but at the same time, were they pressured to ban cards like Leovold or Paradox Engine because of people complaining about that card? I mean, that is the reason why those cards got banned, right? Mm-hmm. It's about finding a threshold and like a proper vehicle to express the problematic nature of certain cards. So like, not because I disagree with like Leovold being banned or Paradox Engine being banned. I think that, you know, those are problematic enough cards in lower power settings, you know, in sort of the target demographic, so to speak, that they could well have been banned. But, you know, like, where did they get the data showing that, you know, a preponderance of players wanted those cards banned, or like it was like really problematic that those cards were being played, or that like Iona, for example, was like really problematic? I don't believe that they really had good data for that. I think that it was probably just discussions, and I think that it was probably more to do with a philosophy than it was to do with hard data. Yeah. Right. But if people are signing petitions, and like these petitions are really, really big, and, you know, have a lot of support behind them, and it demonstrates that same thing, that people are not enjoying certain cards, you know, the RC shouldn't consider that pressure. They should consider that feedback.
I would like to add on to that. Niksha, who isn't on today's show, obviously, had actually a really good topic in mind. Like, should Wizards take over the ban list from the RC? Like, actually, should Wizards regulate the ban list for EDH in general? Because that would be like very interesting, but I believe personally, I'm not sure. I personally would not take that responsibility from the creators of EDH itself. It seems disrespectful on one hand. On the other hand, I do believe some cards that are problematic would get banned. But the issue is we would see a lot more bans and unbans all the time, which I am not generally a fan of.
Igor, do you want to say anything? Because I feel like I've been monopolizing the discussion.
There is a reason why we invited you, so we like your opinion. But after thinking about the whole Wizards taking over DRC and looking what they've been doing in every other format, I don't think I would actually like them taking it over. What I would like is Jesse said, a higher level, or whatever was the term you used for CDH people, more of that input. Not to, completely monopolize the ban list, but to actually have more input heard.
I think they need to expand their vision of the sort of target demographic, for sure.
Shallow doesn't like this, but we are also part of the EDH community.
Yeah, I don't know that he doesn't like it. I think that's already, you know, I don't want to put words into Sheldon's mouth or anything like that.
Let me rephrase. That is the feeling I get.
Okay.
From his attitude and from his tweets. He doesn't actually like us playing at the same table. Metaphorically, not literally.
Well, so the RC is very much against pub stomping, right?
Mm-hmm. But the higher level community is also against pub stomping.
Right. And so if you look at what the rhetoric coming out of the RC, or at least not the rhetoric, because that sounds too negative, but you know, the things that they've been saying recently, it shows that they are open. They're much more open to that idea that, you know, not all CDH players are pub stompers. And like, you know, we do care about having sort of like our own meta game where we play decks that are sort of similar in power level against one another. Mm-hmm. And we want to have, you know, a resonant experience to borrow their language, but played at a different power level. And the RC is also open to this idea that the game should be played at different power levels if it's communicated.
Also, the thing that needs to be communicated is that we people who play more competitively, EDH, we also play casually.
Sure.
That's the thing. We're not just exclusively playing this and that's it. Like, we started the show with Roby gushing over playing Saskia.
Yeah, that was like my highlight for the month, EDH-wise. Like, that deck was fun as all.
There was infinite combos in the deck, but it takes a while to assemble those and, you know, it's mostly much people in the face.
I much rather like name someone and just like infect them to death.
Of course, that's the point of the deck. But sometimes you need to have like a nuclear option.
Yeah, of course.
But my point is, we're also part of the casual community.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I definitely also play at different power levels as well. Like with the example that I gave earlier about getting destroyed by Hulk. Coming out of like, you know, a deck that was also playing like Shouldred, you know, not a card that you would typically see it like in the most high power level type of decks. So it's true that people play at a variety of power levels, but I think, you know, the even more important point is that, and we touched upon this before, is that power level is really very, very hard to define. And it's also like way more variable than people give it credit for being.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
We like to shoehorn it into like a couple, you know, a few different categories, but like it depends on so many factors and it depends on so many dynamics that
I'm sorry, I interrupted you, but like, for instance, what would you rate like a deck filled with Khan's gain lands, you know, that come in tapped, you gain one life lands. Trilands and stuff like that, like subpar
tap lands,
basically any sort of subpar mana producing land, even something like what is it, Temple of the False God,
oof,
something, so, yeah just to like give you an idea about the power level of the deck. So let's say it's a Yarok deck or some UB, some Sultai X deck. You can play Parkers for all as I care. But it's like a casual deck. But it has the entire Flash Hulk package. So no tutors, no really good cantrips, no fast mana. But there's like the Oracle line in it. Complete. How would you rate that deck?
Myself? Not very highly, probably.
Yeah. But as a casual player, would you like go on the table and like just like you're playing a game, you're having fun, you're playing, I don't know, Edgar Markov, which is a pretty powerful commander in like lower power levels. I enjoy him myself a lot. And suddenly just Flash Hulk win out of nowhere. And you were like making token vampires and he was like blocking with like, I don't know, 4/4 worms and stuff like that. And suddenly like, there's... How would that like affect your play experience?
Yeah, I mean, and with the example that you brought up, I was just going to say, like, they are going to have that very rare situation where, you know, presumably they're playing some amount of basic lands.
Yeah.
So, like, that very rare situation where they just naturally have turn two Hulk without any tutors and with, like, mostly enters the battlefield tapped lands and just playing Flash and Hulk. Like, it could happen, and it would happen with enough games. And, like, if you're playing, like, let's say, like, a deck that is not built to do anything similar to that, you might be like, wow, that's kind of dumb. Like, I don't want to play against you. But like, that person's deck is not going to do that 99% of the time. Yeah. And like, and the mana base is so suboptimal, and with the lack of tutors, like, it's probably not going to be a good deck the vast majority of the time.
Most
except that occasional time where it just kind of pub stomps people.
Yeah, but that's, I'm trying to get the point across that would be a bad play experience. And yeah,
absolutely.
Usually they ban cards for exactly that reason. That's why, sadly, Iona got banned. The card was doing really bad things for people who were playing like monocolor decks and couldn't like remove it, actually. But the card itself was fine, because it's like, what is Iona, like 9 mana?
Yeah. Something? No, Iona's 9 mana.
Yeah, and the card by itself is fine. It's a huge beater that locks out certain types of decks. But yeah, you can't have that at lower power levels if someone's playing their, like, I don't know, Psy Master Top Tourist or give me a monocolor commander.
Urza Lord High Artificer.
A bad
example.
The new Renata, there you go.
Yeah.
Felden of the Third Path or whatever.
Yeah, sure. And that would most likely lock them out for the majority of the game until Iona is like removed by someone.
So what's interesting about Iona is that if you look at what Sheldon, I think, or at least the RC said about Iona in the past, you know, they said things along the lines of like, and I'm paraphrasing a lot, but basically they said like, if you're playing a monocolor deck, like there's risks associated with playing monocolor decks. So like, tough luck. Like if Iona comes into play, you know, you should start politicking and like get someone to remove Iona for you. And that's what they said about Iona back in the past. You know, they said things like, oh, you know, if people are doing degenerate graveyard stuff, well, you should be playing answers for degenerate graveyard stuff. So the messaging on that front, at least, is not always entirely clear. That being said, I do think that Iona makes more sense on the ban list than Painter Servant, but I understand not wanting to have both in the format at the same time.
Yeah, exactly, because together they're actually quite good. It's quite a good combo, actually. I probably like just build my own deck like with Painter Servant as like my lower power deck, and just have like my heyday. I would just bring it to like tables where Nyxia's playing, just so I can grief on Nyxia.
I mean, yeah, well, Iona in the command zone doesn't seem like unfair, because you're playing mono white. You need to get to 9 mana to play
in mono white.
In mono white. And like triple white pips too. And then like, you would also need to get your one card win condition, but now we have Heliod. It was just the same thing, essentially, but so much better.
I was going to say, once you get to 90 mana, I don't think that 3 white is, you know, the problem.
Yeah, that's fair. You you wrap Sol Ring into, like, Thran Dynamo.
You can probably get to 9 mana, like, by turn 8 if you play, like, Temple of the False God. Easy.
I mean, you can get there pretty quickly if you just, like, turn 1, land Mana Vault, and then turn 2, play Smothering Tithe, and then go around the table twice.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. The perfect casual plays, yes.
Yeah. I mean, look, or turn 1, Sol Ring, turn 2, land Smothering Tithe.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good enough.
And that's a line that I could see just about any deck doing.
Smothering Tide is probably the best white card they printed in like 3 years.
At least 3 years.
That's a little off topic though.
Yeah.
Really? On this podcast? A little bit off topic?
I mean, yeah, to be fair.
there anything else we need to add? Because it's been like over 2 hours.
Has it? Oh,
yes,
gosh.
Yes, it has.
I don't know. Have we mentioned Tassa's Oracle? I don't know. I don't remember.
We can mention it maybe once or twice in the podcast.
Oh, sure. it's a fish. Not important. Doesn't do anything.
I mean...
It's a great card for my Azami deck because it's also a wizard.
That's true. That's very... Mind blown. I forgot about that. It's a wizard.
You know, some people might just play that card.
Yeah, I think point final. If you think Thassa's Oracle is good, play it. It's all right.
You know,
those are the best closing words I've ever heard.
Yeah. So, any other closing words you have, Robbie?
Listen to the podcast and you learn stuff about how to play stuff, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, not this podcast, but you know, certain there is a podcast that...
I meant actually legit podcasts where like you get good info. Only good info you got today was from Jesse's mouth.
Yeah, thanks, Robbie. My feelings are not hurt at all, yeah.
I don't care about your feelings.
Nobody does, apparently. But yeah, Jesse, where can people find you?
Once again, Team Turn 3. So you can find us at twitch.tv/teamturn3. That's T-U-R-N and then 3 spelled out, T-H-R-E-E. And so we stream most Sundays starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So in fact, we're streaming tonight.
Hey.
Oh.
Of course, it'll probably be too late for my friends here to actually tune in.
Yeah, it's like a 10:45, and I gotta get up at like 4 a.m.
But you can check out our VODs as well. So if you can't catch us live,
I'm a subscriber. I like subscribed to your channel like 2 years ago, and then I've been patiently waiting for your uploads.
Well, so they're not gonna be coming on the YouTube so much anymore until I like fix something on my computer. I'd been trying to sort of like edit the VODs from Twitch and then upload them. And I did that once or twice, but then my computer crashed and I no longer have Premiere. And also, my computer just does not want to let me do that type of stuff anymore. So, hopefully eventually.
Twitch it is.
Yeah, if you want to catch the VODs, Twitch is currently the place. And eventually, when I either get a new computer or repair my computer, hopefully I'll be able to start uploading those VODs again.
Then I'm definitely tuning into Twitch tomorrow.
Robbie, do you want people to find you in any shape or fashion, or?
No, I don't like people. I don't want anyone.
There you go. Spoken like a true stacks player.
Stay away from me, please. Don't greet me on the streets.
Well, I guess that has been the episode 110 of the Old Dragon Dirtle podcast. Everybody have a good night, and as always, the Emperor protects.
The Emperor protects. Good night, people.
Good night.